Super Furry Animals on Radio 3. Show your hand and happy new year to Morris Misanowski from Melbourne. How are you, Morris?
I'm excellent, thanks. And welcome to the future, 2016.
I told you we could time travel. There's a couple of things that I'm interested in this morning. Mark Zuckerberg plans to make his own AI butler like Jarvis on Iron Man. We've seen this represented. We saw Bicentennial Man. We've seen all these 1960s TV things about the way of the future. But tell me what you think about having this other being helping you do stuff.
Yeah, good on him. I hope he brings it on soon. Look, the reality is that we've seen it in science fiction for 30 or 40 years. It's been the stuff that we've watched in Jetsons. The reality is, over the last year or so, and especially 2016, the year that we sit in, we've known for the last couple of years that this would be the year of the personal robot. And we knew that because it took a while to build them, to get the patents. So what we've seen is already a whole lot of press releases at the end of last year. My favourite one is for Jibo, J-I-B-O, which is a little personal robot, and there's a whole lot of others. So what he's talking about, in fact, is not something of science fiction. It's not something that he alone wants. It's something that an entire industry is now growing, literally as we speak, to do. Jibo is going to be available in the States in the first half of this year, and the price should be somewhere about $1,500 US.
What does it do?
Now, it doesn't move around the house. Let's not think robots and androids and things. It's a thing that sits on a counter. It doesn't really move, but it has a revolving head on it. And what it does is to be able to read emails, SMS. You can interact with it the way that you talk to Siri and other voice-activated apps, and it begins to know you. We've spoken before about anticipatory technology, stuff that kind of understands what you want.
And this is fabulous, Morris, but let's cut to the chase.
Yes. Yeah.
Siri's a load of rubbish.
No. It's a glorious, absolutely glorious. It's what humankind has always wanted to have. Something that talks to you that doesn't talk back and you can tell it to shut up. It does all your bidding. It does everything.
Well, you can wax lyrical about the technological side of this, but I'm interested in the stuff in between. But there's always been this notion of something humanoid, android. It has to have human form. It has to somehow replace something human. Now, you're going to tell me that's not the case at all, I assume.
Well, the answer is yes, we do have. We have absolutely that type of device, and they're called androids. And there are a whole lot of work, mostly out of Japan and Korea, around the android, trying to give it that human factor. But a lot of the work that's being done now is really not about trying to give it a human factor, so per se, in other words, arms, legs and a body, but giving it some kind of personality. And what Zuckerberg is in fact talking about is not something that moves at all. He's really talking about a device that sits inside the walls, something he can talk to like a HAL, H-A-L from the movie and from the book. And what he wants is a device that really is just all over his house, much like his sound system, that can talk to him and it can talk to them. Now, there's a whole debate of whether this is sociologically a good thing or not, and we should have that debate. And I can sit on the fence and look at both sides, because I've seen wonderful interactions between humans that have dementia or that have some kind of ailment that makes them less able to leave home, that have really good interactions with these kinds of robots. And then, of course, there are the people that will abuse them. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, well, the thing is here, you often wonder how long it will be before we start to grow gills again, because these things are wonderful, but they stop us doing things that we naturally do. The obvious example of that is people's handwriting these days is atrocious.
It absolutely is, and you're right. But the notion of how long have we needed handwriting for, and for what purpose is it? The purpose of handwriting is to communicate, and we do that in other ways. Now, you know, I'm teasing, I'm being provocative. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with us not being able to handwrite. But from the viewpoint of where we live now, we look back and we lament something that we've lost. But history is littered with things that were once absolutely prevalent, the only way of doing things. Life will cease without us ever doing them that way. And we've moved on through the centuries and forgotten even how we did those sorts of things.
So you're saying this is the next generation of, well, normality?
Absolutely. And not only the next generation, I think it's the next 2 or 3 years of devices. Phil, it doesn't make sense that we all carry a mobile phone around in our pocket. Why can't we just wait till we get back to our homes and our offices? And I mean that in some senses to be absolutely true. We're besotted by them and we should give them up. But again, we've gotten so used to that technology that it's now normal These personal robots, I'm sure over the next 20 years, which is what it took mobile phones, over the next 20 years will be normal as well. And again, let's not just think of them as things that chase us around the home. We're really talking about devices we have now that we might be able to interact with, that we might be able to speak with, that might be able to understand a little bit more about us and have a bit more intelligent conversation than just a Siri-type conversation of today.
I'll tell you what, you bring up a very good point. You just touched on it. We can be lazy and get all these wonderful technological things, but people with disabilities, you mentioned Alzheimer's, dementia, aged, whatever. See, that's when it sounds really enticing.
Yeah, and that's the argument I usually use to prove the bigger argument, which we shouldn't do, of course. We pull out one example. But I have seen some really wonderful humanoid-type robots. There's a thing called a seal, like the animal, S-E-A-L, a seal, which is a furry animal. It obviously is a robot of sorts. It's been, again, out of Japan. It's been around for, I'd say, about 8-9 years. And it's given to dementia patients for them to hold, and they stroke it much the same way you and I might stroke a cat or a dog. Nothing unusual about that. But what it does is to measure the stroke, measure the interaction of the person, and it learns about them. And if something is untoward, in other words, if it hasn't been touched or something is wrong about the handler, that infirmed person, it then escalates that to a nurse and to other people. So that's a really interesting thing to do. I've seen robots that, again, are able to assist with people with dementia to be able to walk around spaces so they don't get lost, don't get hurt. There are some really good reasons for them. Zuckerberg is, because of his name and his title, able to get some markets and media conversation around this. Whether what he does will be ordinary, or whether the Jibos, the Peppers, the Furos, the Cubics, which are all brand names of robots we expect to see in the first half of this year, is normal. I don't know, but I do know from everything I've read and the people I've spoken to, it is one of the horizon pushes from this year on.
Let's stay with Mark Zuckerberg for a second, because there's a thing in the Washington Post that says India deserves better than Zuckerberg's watered-down internet. Tell us about that.
This is a really interesting piece, and I'd love to know your thoughts on it. What's happened is that over the last year, a little bit longer, but last year in the media, Zuckerberg, through his mates, has said that they want to give everyone on the planet internet access, regardless of where they are, regardless of wealth, income, or anything else. And they intend to do that through drones and through balloons, like weather-type balloons they put into the air. Here's internet. It's available for free. If you have a device, you can use it. It has been launched in India in the last couple of months. And Zuckerberg made a comment, and this is his comment, of this internet, which he calls Free Basic. He cites the example of a farmer called Ganesh, and says that this farmer will be able to find weather, prepare for monsoons, to look up commodity prices, get better deals, invest in crops. And he goes on to talk about this. And it seems like a reasonable thing to be proud of that this farmer would have. Well, Zuckerberg has copped a whole lot of abuse about that, and he's been called imperialist. Because what's happened is that, of course, and this is where I'd be interested in your thoughts, is the question is, of course, that when this internet was given, it was given with conditions and not with an openness of everything being available. In other words, the major partners who provided the internet were the partners that allowed the web portals. So you can't, for instance, use Google. You can only use Facebook to search on. You can only use the partners' websites to go through. So it's very limited in the access that you have to the outside world. And what they're saying is, or some of the opponents of this are saying that it's very much like the imperialistic world of the English when they were in charge of India. You can do whatever you want as long as it's the way that we say it to be done.
Bit of a stretch, that one, Maurice, but it's an interesting point. I'm wondering how many of these rules come from within India.
I don't know. I really don't know. Some of them I would suggest would, but this is meant to be a more freer space because of the way that it's accessed. For me, it really comes down to the question of, should there be, I mean, these people are in it for a benevolent but commercial reason. Should they have to provide broad access to everybody for the internet, or is it enough to say, look, for our money, we'll give you access to what we want, and if you don't like it, you're not compelled to use it?
Sounds to me like there's a... It sounds to me like there's a conversation that's been had. I was going to say a deal, but a conversation that's been had. I mean, don't forget, a lot of these countries don't want their people to have certain kinds of information. You imagine trying to fly something like this in China, exactly yeah. the same thing would happen.
Well, absolutely, and you're right. But in India, it seems to be a little bit freer in the access law. But again, it's a really interesting debate because it comes back not just to developing nations, but to every space on the world. And it's this conversation that's been going on for decades of net neutrality. Should everybody have unfettered equal rights to anything on the internet? And there's been a roaring debate between whether that's true or not. And when for the people that say, yes, you should, then quite rightly, we see sites of pedophilia and other things, of course, people would not want people to have access to use the examples for exactly. net neutrality not being allowed. So there's no easy answer to this, but what he's done is to spark this debate again with net neutrality into developing nations and the notion of providing internet with strings.
If you want to find out more about this, he wrote an op-ed for the Times of India, and of course he defended it. But let's flip the coin once again. This is called Free Basics, so maybe what it says on this tin is exactly what Mark Zuckerberg wants to give to them, and the notion of a free internet, you know, just didn't come into the conversation, maybe.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think we're using free in two different ways. I think he's using free as in no cost, not as in open access.
And I'm interested in the basics word.
Yeah, and so which way do we fall? And that's, as I said, to me the most fascinating debate so far in the last couple of days seems to be this one, and watching people rip into it on both sides.
Well, let's just focus on the end user here. Funnily enough, we haven't really mentioned Ganesh, this farmer. How's it going to improve his life, I wonder?
The notion of being able to have internet access, I think, would considerably change his life. Whether it's for better or worse is something for him and his family to decide. But it certainly opens him up to a world that would not be open before. And not being an expert in India, but having spent a little bit of time there and some time in these spaces, they are, of course, very much commanded by their physical regional area to understand the weather, to be able to negotiate prices for their crops and other things. Their access to information is limited. So if that can be opened up, you would suppose that their world would offer more opportunity. I don't know if that's true or not, but as a Westerner, I would believe that to be a conversation worth having. So the question is for Ganesh to answer, but you know, for me, I would rather...
The other side of that thing, Maurice, about imperialism is that maybe there is a section of society there that says we don't want Ganesh to be empowered in this way. Yeah. Think what it would do to us.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the roaring debates that have been going on for hundreds, if not thousands, of years in humanity, but now played out using the internet as the portal, rather than the command of rather than sending out somebody to take over a land like in India and then to rule it for hundreds of years. Do we have the same sort of thing now by the internet? Are those people today's land moguls?
A great big conversation, Maurice. I'm afraid we're out of time now. I want to come back to this next week, and also a great big tech show that's going on in Las Vegas, which you'll have lots to talk about, I'm sure, when we chat next Tuesday. In the meantime, Maurice Misolowski, thank you so much.